And my Bhuka friends were on my editorial board. And we started going to the printer. For 6 months, we didn't even know where the printer was. And when do you become a collector? When you collect your 5th work, or your 20th work, or your 50th work, or when you run out of space, or when somebody else puts that tag on you. Somehow, art and culture has become elitist in the last 25 years. Yeah. Art and culture has become about its monetary value rather than intrinsic value and what you get out of it. Yeah. Difference between any other species and us is our ability to express. Mm-hmm. And there's no better medium to express it than the art.
Yeah. We are also at a very interesting juncture in the country's evolution. With that, I think also there is a renewed desire to find our roots. And a lot of that, identity, who we are as a country, comes from art and heritage and craft. Who are we as people?
Who are we as people? I think you've summed it up really well.
Abhishek, welcome.
Thank you, Mukesh.
It's strange me welcoming you in your own place. Just out the outside, let me just say we are at MAP, which is this iconic location in Bangalore. You know, it's a museum of art and photography that you have championed for in some ways throughout your life, but more actively last 10 years. So we'll come to that. But thanks for letting us host this podcast here.
Thank you. Super excited. Even though you're welcoming me to MAP, it's a pleasure to be on your podcast channel.
Right. It's great.
Yeah.
It's I think first time I came to MAP, I think just before it was about to open. And Abhishek, I was so impressed with the this whole facility, which is celebration of Indian arts, and so painstakingly, put together. You walk me through everything has gone into bringing so many different facets of Indian art and culture, all with very modern lens, a lot of technology that's incorporated in it. So let's start. How did someone like you, who's very successful businessman, you have many things going well, why commit so much time and effort to build something like this?
So I think one, art has always been of interest to me. It's been something I've been passionate about ever since I was a kid. Why it took this turn to do a museum? It's something I toyed around with, but I never really took it very seriously because I didn't even know what it meant. And the penny really dropped when, this must have been about 8-9 years ago, and I said, am I really leading the life that I want to lead? And am I leaving the world a better place than I found it? And the honest answer was, I had a damn good life, but I was really not making any difference except to myself and the people around me. And at that age and stage in your life, you start taking stock of what you've done, and you've got to be truthful to yourself. Mm-hmm. And one keeps hearing that if you're doing something you're passionate about, you're never going to work for a day in your life. And this was an area where a lot was lacking in India. So mm-hmm. I said, why don't I am passionate about this. Mm-hmm. Let me try and make a difference. And that's how the journey began.
Amazing. And, in preparation for this episode, Abhishek, me and my team, we were doing research on kind of your association with art, and we came to know that you started this art magazine when you were in school, in boarding school up north. So you were always fascinated with art from early?
Well, that was actually for a very selfish reason,
okay.
And I must confess. So I was at boarding school at Dune, and I don't know if you've been in a boarding school ever.
I have not been to boarding
school. So you're constantly hungry when you're in a boarding school, and the most important thing for you in school is food. So you bust bounds and you go out when you're not supposed to go out at the risk of getting caught and expelled. And of course, school food, even if it's good food, you complain about it. And you were only allowed a little bit of home food, which had to be finished off in one day. So you constantly were looking for food. The only reason you would wait for your friends' parents to come is because you would get something to eat. So we used to bust bounds and go out, but risking our lives. Until one day I found these guys who were just walking out from the main gate in the middle of the day.
Mm.
So I said, where the hell are you guys going? And they said, oh, we are going to meet the printer. I said, why the hell are you going to meet the printer? They said, we are in charge of the school weekly.
Mm.
So I said, just explain this to me. They said, no, we have to go and see the printing of the weekly.
Mm.
So I said, this is damn good. I should do a magazine now.
Right.
Now, the only subject the school didn't have a magazine on was art. So I go to the headmaster and I said, you know, we need to do an art magazine. He said, but who the hell is interested in art? I said, exactly. We need to get our kids interested in art. You know, Doon is an all-rounded school. How can you have science and mathematics and history of importance and art of no importance? So he said, yeah, I think you've got a point there. We need to do an art magazine. So then we started negotiating as to how often this magazine should come out. Now, I didn't want to do any magazine. I just wanted to go to the printer. And he was sure that we needed a quarterly magazine, or at least, if first he started off with monthly, he said, at least quarterly karo. I said, for the first year, let's do one issue. Let's do an annual. So I managed to get him to say yes. Then we had to negotiate about who's going to be the master in charge. I said, listen, you either trust me or you don't. So it was the first time there was no master in charge. And my Bhuka friends were on my editorial board. And we started going to the printer. For 6 months, we didn't even know where the printer was. But we would go to watch a movie, we would go to eat something, we would go to have a drink.
So art has a lot of benefits.
Absolutely. And when the time finally came to produce the magazine, I didn't know what to put in there. So we wrote to 10 of India's greatest artists, saying we are a bunch of kids from school starting a magazine.
How old were you at that time?
Must have been 17. And I said, we need you to write something for us. And everybody laughed at me. They said, who the hell is going to reply to you? To add insult to injury, my headmaster calls me, and this was our golden jubilee year. Rajiv Gandhi had just become prime minister, and he was an ex-Rosco. And he was coming to be the chief guest. He said, Abhishek, Rajiv is going to launch your magazine. I used this four-letter word saying that's the last thing I wanted to hear. Now, I had to get the magazine ready.
Right.
Now, sure enough, I got only one reply. And we had to print the magazine. There was one page left to be printed. I got back 8 more replies from these artists.
Wow.
So I said, at least my ijjat is saved. I pinned up all the letters behind where Rajiv Gandhi was going to launch it. And in the holidays that followed, I went to meet all the artists to thank them for having taken me seriously. And that's how a lot of these artists, is the first time I met them.
Oh, incredible. What a great story at the age of 17. And was that the time where your interest in art kind of got cemented, or you were interested in art before?
I think I was interested in art before, okay. But that's when the physical intimacy and relationship with the artists and actually learning from them began.
Yeah, right. Do you remember anything? What are some of these guys, when you went and saw them, and you said there were some of the top artists in India at the time, what did some of those guys say, you know, meeting this, you know, kid from Doon School, you know, doing this art magazine?
You know, so take, for example, someone like Ram Kumar, who's, I mean, a lot of those artists are no more because they're all dead and gone now. I knocked on his door. I rang the doorbell. This was in Delhi in Nizamuddin. And this frail-looking gentleman looks up from the Barsati below and he says, you're pressing the wrong doorbell. You need to press the other doorbell. So I said, but it says Ram Kumar first floor. So he says, have you come to meet me? I said, are you Mr. Ram Kumar? He said, yeah. So he thought I had come to play with the kids below or something. So he said, "What? Why have you come to see me?" I said, I've come to see your paintings. So it was literally just like that these relationships began. And then the letters that they've written to me, the holidays we've been for together, so that was my opinion.
You have those letters with you still?
All of them.
Amazing. Maybe some of them will ask you to share one or two with us. We can include in this. And from there on, you got involved in arts actively from that age, or how did your journey, your personal journey with art, you know, unfolded over years?
So I think it was organic. It was nothing premeditated as to what I wanted to do. I had an interest. I guess these artists had all the time in the world in those days, because today an artist of the same stature would not give that kind of time. Art was not expensive. Art was not what people used to collect.
Yeah.
It was very, very, very niche in those days. And we had barely a handful of galleries across the country. So it was hanging out with them and looking through a creative mind and what goes in there and how they are able to transform a thought into a canvas or into a sculpture was what was fascinating for me. Before one knew it, because one became friends with them, and it was small amounts of money, one started collecting it. Just because one enjoyed it, and one thing just led to another.
And over a period of time, you ended up with a pretty impressive collection of things.
That's what they say.
What do you think, you know?
I think, a lot of that has come to map now. Right. So
this is like over, I'm guessing, probably 30, 40 years worth of collection that that you've been doing. And some of what, and you're saying that you didn't have any intention of building a collection. You just liked, you know, meeting these people and like art at some, you know, probably deeper level, and the collection slowly organically build itself.
So I don't think anybody collects to become a collector. Mm-hmm. You collect to be around it.
Yeah.
And when do you become a collector? Mm-hmm. When you collect your fifth work or your 20th work or your 50th work, yeah, or when you run out of space or when somebody else puts that tag on you. So I guess in my case, all of those things happened over a period of time. I never looked at myself as a collector. I think it's a label that others put on you.
Fair. And at some point, you know, you were doing it out of, you know, personal interest and passion. You were collecting, you know, maybe consciously or unconsciously, but the collection was growing. At some point, you decided to house it in a facility like this. When did that idea take root in your head? And also, how was that journey of, you know, I don't think anything like this exists in India. Even globally, I don't know if there are, you know, private initiative where people have built a museum of this kind in last, you know, decade at least.
There are many private museums that have happened around the world.
Okay.
Yes, in India, it's a new thing. But, you know, it used to always bother me that to see great art or great exhibitions, I had to go abroad to see great Indian exhibitions. Now, why should we not be able to see it here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's great art in the country, but it's not well put together.
Mm-hmm.
We have more than 1,000 government museums, but many of them leave you wanting something at the end of your trip.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us are not museum goers.
Yeah.
We go for that one mandatory trip from school, but then you don't go back again because you've not enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But every time we travel overseas, you'll stand in a queue for half an hour, 45 minutes to enter a museum. So I said, it's time to do that here. Secondly, it was, what are you going to do with what you have? And it became too much for, and it was a little unfair that it's just sitting in storage. Even for that matter, in a museum, it sits in storage because you only show a part of it, which is why we've digitized as much as we can. So at least digitally, one can enjoy it.
Right.
And I think initially it was different museums from abroad who came and said, Abhishek, what are you going to do with all this stuff? Would you gift it to us?
Yeah.
You know, different museums from overseas. I said, this collection should stay in India. If you open a branch in India, I'll give it to you. And nobody was prepared to do that. And why should great things only be available outside and not here? So I said, Koit, if no one's going to do it, I'll do it.
And, when did you decide? Like, how long it was when you decided, okay, I'm going to do something?
So I think it really came together when the government approached me, saying, why don't we do a museum together? And this was the local government here. I think it was about 2014 is when the idea was initially floated, 10 years ago. And I said, happy to do it, but what does this mean? And I said, but what would you do in the museum? So they said, no, we don't know very much about museums, but we can give you the land. I said, you'll give me the land in some faraway village outside the city. I don't want that. And then he turns around and says, no, but listen, I'll give you whichever building you want in Bangalore. And then immediately he says, knowing you, you'll ask for the Vidhan Sabha or something. So there are six buildings I won't give you. Besides those six, you can take anyone. So I said, name the six buildings. I wanted to see which ones are excluded. And I said, would you give me the museum across the road, the Bangalore Museum, the red one? He said, take it. So I said, let's go and have a look at it and tell me what I can do and what I can't do. And then I also said, see, today you are in power, tomorrow you will not be. The next guy will come and redo whatever you've done, so please make a policy first. And to their credit, they actually made a policy, which was a PPP policy, and they put 38 assets up for adoption. And about 8 of them did get adopted. But it was very short-lived because it didn't go through thereafter. But I think it was a little early for its time, and today it should succeed.
So that partnership government in the end didn't materialize, and at some point you said, I'm just going to do it on my own.
So it didn't materialize not because the government didn't want it to. I think we had a little bit of a suspicion from the artist community themselves. People thought that this is a backdoor entry into doing a land grab. And the three museums across the road is the Visheshwaraya Science and Technology Museum, the main Bangalore Museum, and the Venkatapad Gallery. So it was the one in the middle, the red one, the Bangalore Museum, that was offered first, where they weren't allowing me to change very much. And I said, listen, I don't want to be running a government museum. So we opted for the Venkatapad Gallery. And Kiran was taking the Visheshwaraya, Kiran Mazumdar. And between Kiran and me, we said, we don't want the government in the middle here. Let's make it the museum mile. Let's have a common entrance, common parking, all facilities, cafeteria and stuff. So JSW was very keen because they had this big investment in Tornagal that they wanted to do something in culture. So we spoke to Sajan and Sangeeta and they were to take that and do it. So all these were signed. But then shit hit the fan. And thank heavens that happened, because if that had gone through, then this would not have happened.
And from there to committing to this, what was that journey like? At some, because this is sizable investment in every sense, you know, a lot of capital, time investment. I know you've been in many ways on the road, you know, talking to people who are supporting, as well as artists, as well as, you know, other museums around the world. It's a massive commitment. When do you say, decide to commit, you know, that's a...
So the moment that didn't go through... And I didn't think that I could have done this, because the biggest cost at that time in my mind was the land and putting up a structure. When it was Venkatapad Gallery, the entire budget was about 16 or 18 crores. And I was putting that all by myself. When we did a back of the envelope calculation for this piece of land and to build it, in 2015, it was 100 crores. And... So it was substantially higher. Today, of course, it's become several times that. But I said, fine, I'll do it. And we said, we'll put in half and we'll raise the other half. And that's how we went about it. Had I known the magnitude of this before I'd started, I don't think I would have started. It's only because you came to know about it incrementally. And when you're in the tunnel, you feel you're already halfway through. So rather than going back, you might as well go through without realizing it's even longer than you had imagined.
I think that's how all big projects get done. You know, if people, anyone recognizes, you know, in the end, what will it tell, including all entrepreneurs who start, you know, we feel like in 4 or 5 years, we'll build something, exit this, that. But it never 5 years into it, you know, you're you know, halfway into it and there's no point, you know, so you go through the distance, right? But it's a, but, you know, unlike a commercial, you know, project, this is a, in some ways, you know, it's in every sense of the word, it's really giving back. I think there is, it's not about a building or even, you know, just the arts that displayed here. But I think you're trying to say that, you know, India deserves to celebrate the, you know, what you mentioned earlier, like very rich history of art and tradition, which somehow the way things panned out, you know, yes, we have some museums, etc. But culturally, they are not really top of mind for people, you know, the, other than a school museum trip that we all...
You're very right, Mukesh, but 40 years ago, this was not the case. It was much more top of mind than it is today. I mean, even the every issue of the Illustrated Weekly of India, of the India Today in those days, would have an entire section on art and culture. Somehow, art and culture has become elitist in the last 25 years. Art and culture has become about value rather than about its monetary value rather than intrinsic value and what you get out of it. So maybe the media has had a role to play in it. It's all about how much it's sold for in the auction and that makes news rather than anything else about it. So I think it's for the wrong reasons that art makes news today. And, you know, the museum is a new thing for India because it came only with the English. Otherwise, we were living in a museum. Our temples, our forts, our palaces. We had art all around us, you know. Look at the textiles that we've had. Look at the craft that we've had. There was no separation between art and craft. All this is a very 250-year-old construct.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's now to bring it back to that and mix everything up is what is one of our efforts.
Right. And what role do you think, you know, art plays in any society? And I think that's very interesting. You know, I think as you, when you say it, it's obvious. I think art, what you're saying, art was embedded in everyday fabric of, you know, of life. You will see it everywhere, including when you go to temples and stuff. But now in 2 days' time, you know, how like, a lot of, you know, youngsters, you know, listen to this podcast as they listen to this episode. What is your input to, like, why, you know, if someone to ask why art matters, you know, why should I care?
So I'll ask you this question. When the world shut down, and in March you were locked up at home,
yeah.
Besides surviving, what really kept you sane? I think more art has been consumed in the 2 years of lockdown.
Yeah.
And people have realized this. Whether it is in terms of music, it is in terms of literature, it's in terms of actually art, it's in terms of, you know, online lectures that you would hear about, that movies, all of this, it is the arts that has kept us alive. The difference between any other species and us is our ability to express. And there's no better medium to express it than the arts.
Yeah.
There is both emotion in that,
yeah,
and there's creativity in that. And that's what separates us from anybody else. Who we are, I mean, one of the oldest things and one of the most intrinsic things is art at the end of the day.
Yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely.
Why is culture used to call somebody a cultured person?
Right. Yeah.
It's not just the experiences that he's had,
yeah,
or about how much money he has, but what makes a person cultured and a person not cultured?
Right. Yeah. Art is also a lot, I mean, my understanding is also a lot about just, you know, human expression. There are some things, you know, where just very difficult to put in words, both, you know, someone trying to articulate it or someone listening. But there are, like, as a human being, you know, our ability to comprehend things are beyond, you know, just the logical, rational things which can be articulated. Art, you know, in some way, the full expression of humanity, you know, who we are.
Absolutely.
As a species, right? You know, it gets...
Not just that, if you look at any movement, before it becomes a political movement, it's an artistic movement.
Oh, give me an example of that. It makes a lot of sense, but let's look at some of the movement which started as art.
See, the artists are the ones who are living on the edge.
Yeah.
Always. And they are the real risk takers.
Yes.
They would say things to provoke,
right,
before it becomes the norm. I mean, the genesis of a lot of movements,
yeah,
can be traced down to actually one crackpot,
right,
thinking like that. And why do people say half the artists are mad? It's not that they are mad, it's because they think differently and they think out of the box.
That's very interesting. And what's the... Today, what's your sense of, you know, art as a career choice for people? Is it growing? Do we have a lot of, you know, artists coming up on both as a profession, but also as the rebel mindset? You know, artists are able to visualize something, you know, they think very orthogonally and able to combine things that, you know, normal course of things we may not think of connecting. Do you see that we have a thriving...
So it's a very interesting question, Mukesh. It depends on which side you're looking at it from. As a parent, if you're encouraging your kids to become an artist, it's because of the economic benefit and seeing the prices that paintings are selling, that you can say, ki acha, now this is... So I'll give you an example, a real-life case example. One of my tea plantations, the gentleman who was the manager there, an elderly Gujarati gentleman, and I'm talking about 25 years ago, he tells me, he says, Abhishek, look at my son. He's becoming an artist. Aap isko kuch samjhaiye. Ye koi career choice hai. And I actually knew about his work. And I said, uncle, he's doing a damn good job. Please encourage him to do that. So that was where people were at that time. That, you know, artists are going to be striving all their lives. They're going to be hungry and they're going to be desperate because there's no money in the arts. Today... You won't believe, I was just having a call with somebody from the School of the Art Institute in Chicago. What number of Indian students they've had in the last 40 years. They've had that in the last 2 years.
Wow. These are students who are going from India to the art
school. Just to become an artist in that one school. But, so if you're becoming an artist because it's an inner calling...
Yeah.
it's a different kind of an artist. Mm-hmm. If you're becoming an artist as a career choice,
yeah.
as what's going to make you more money, mm. I think if you're lucky, you're lucky. Mm. But the amount of additional work you have to do,
mm-hmm.
you're in it for the glamour of it, yeah. in it, or you're doing it because you're best suited for it, mm. are two different things.
But also the second part of that question is this thing you mentioned, you know, a lot of new ideas, a lot of revolution started as art. So what are the hotbeds of those new ideas? You know, we read about some of these, you know, the Europe of the last 150 years comes up a lot, or even, you know, some of the, you know, I know, Soho district in New York and so on. What are the equivalents in India where, you know, the young artists of today's India? JNU?
I mean, that's one which has been in the news and what has happened over there. But if you go historically, if you even look at, you know, what happened recently in Baroda, in MS University, where this particular artwork by, I think, Chandra Mohan was the artist, which was pulled down and he was jailed because it was provoking. Mm. Now, if art can provoke so much that you have this debate, you have a julus, you have a shutdown, you put the guy in jail. Look at what's happened in Bengal in theater right now.
Mm.
Just, you've been reading it in the newspapers in the last few days.
Mm.
It's all the arts.
Right. Fair, fair. And from people, you know, who have interest in art but never got an opportunity to pursue either recreationally or professionally, you know, people who want to learn more about arts and crafts in India, what's the best way for them to, other than visiting MAP, MAP, which people should, you reminded me, we call it MAP. I think everyone definitely in Bangalore should visit. But beyond that, you know, how should one start the journey? Because art is also it's a very, you know, a lot of rich heritage. It's a very wide world. Like, how should one, you know, inform themselves about this?
So it's a full ocean. There are so many aspects to art.
Yeah.
Right, from contemporary art to photography to classical art to textiles. So we are having a lot more available now than we had before. There are many, many small initiatives. People are conscious about it. People are becoming house proud. There are many galleries springing up. There are now art festivals. There are art fairs that happen. Mm-hmm. There are photography festivals. None of these things ever existed when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was interested in art and going around. So I think those opportunities exist. Plus, there's the internet, which has everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're much younger than me, so we
not can't... that much younger, but yeah.
So I think the world is a totally different place today.
Mm.
You can be sitting in the comfort of your home. You can visit the MoMA, the Met, MAP, any museum in the world from wherever you are on a little device. Mm. So you really don't have to travel that distance. And so much information, much more than you can consume, is there. It's how interested you are and what is the effort you're going to make towards it.
And speaking of technology, I think you've also put in a lot of thought of, you know, because this is in a very, MAP is a modern museum and we're in Bangalore, you know, India's Silicon Valley, you know, heart of technology. And you have incorporated a lot of that in the way how the whole place is set up. Can you talk a bit more about how technology is used in how MAP is, you know, designed?
So the honest answer is I could barely spell technology before MAP started. And it was, I think, February of 2020 that we announced we are going to open in December that year. And in March, the world came to a standstill, which, of course, at that time we thought is only going to be for 3 weeks or something. But in about July, August, we realized this is much longer. And everybody had a long face, so we said, what are we going to do? And I said, we've made a commitment. We are going to open on, I can't remember, it was 6th or 7th of December. And my team said, but are you nuts? Who's going to come?
Yeah.
So I said, but we've made a commitment that we're going to open, so we have to open. So I said, okay, we'll open, but if nobody comes, let's do a digital opening. Now, what is a digital opening? We didn't know because there was no museum that opened digitally. Yeah. And of course, in those days, everything had to be digital. So I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and I said, we are going to do a digital opening for MAP. So he said, so Abhishek, what are you going to do? So I said, we'll have a few speakers and they'll speak. And I don't know what we'll do, but we'll do something like that. And he says, no, come on, you can't be doing that. So I said, why not? But this is what everybody would do. And he asked me a very profound question, which really made me think. He said, how many Zoom calls have you done in these last 6 months? I said, hundreds. I don't know how many. He said, tell me about a memory you've made digitally. And I said, I don't know what that means. Can you ask me that again? He said, you might remember a conversation because you made notes about it. But when you switch off the screen, what do you remember? And I said, I don't remember anything. So he says, how would you like your opening to be remembered? If people are going to switch it off, then what the hell are they going to remember? So I said, I don't know. That's a good question. So I said, what would you suggest? What should we do? And he said, but why don't you take them into the building and show them the building? I said, but it's not ready because everything had to shut down. So he said, so? This is Bangalore and this is technology. Why can't you finish the building digitally? I said, no, thank you for complicating my life even more. And I said, okay, we'll take them. So now I had to tell my tech team, I said, make a model of the building that we are going to walk through. And I want it to look as if it's finished with all the art hanging in there. So, you know, if they had a chance to murder me, I would have been dead about 10 times by now. Then I'm speaking to this filmmaker and I said, you have to help us do this. So he said, fine. But after he hears the whole thing, he says, tell me, when you go to an art opening, what do you see? So I said, well, I go to see the art, but I only end up seeing the heads of people because they're always so crowded. So he's saying, we'll do an opening without any people. I said, but how boring would that be? So he said, let me show you what we'll do. He said, you can hear the people, but you won't be able to see the people. So I said, what does that mean? He said, we'll make you feel as if you're in the middle of crowds of people. So you can hear the glasses, you can hear their laughter, you can hear them coughing, you can hear the bangles, you can hear the silk sari rustle, you can hear their steps. But you will get to see the art, because otherwise you go to an opening, you see the people, and then you have to go back to see the art. And then we complicated our life much more because I wanted 10 different people to take you through different parts. Now, the long and short of the story is, if I had done a physical opening in this building, I would have had 130 people in my auditorium. We had 30,000 people who came for a digital opening.
It's incredible.
And for the first time in my life, I realized what technology can do. So that's when my CTO jokes that, you know, I had a little room in the basement. Now I've got the corner office on the top floor. But nothing could happen without that.
Yes, 100 times bigger scale. And, you know, the scale has no limit. Wow, how far it can go. So, you know, so putting, you know, map together, one was about building and team and everything, but also building a comprehensive collection. You started with what you've been building, but I think you also collaborated with many people. Some people have, I think, donated or loaned some artworks. You know, just talk about that, you know, the whole process of putting together a comprehensive collection beyond, you know, what you had.
I had never thought that people would ever gift art because that concept doesn't exist in India. Although almost every great collection overseas has been built by gifts that people have given. Museums don't have the money to buy art. MAP did start with a gift that my family gave of our collection. But so this was one of the first gifts we got. I was giving a talk in Chicago about MAP, and this lady who's in the audience, she asked me to meet her after the talk, and she said, can I invite you over tomorrow to my home? So I said, fine. And she said, I want to spend half an hour with you. So I asked the host of that evening, I said, who's this lady and why does she want me there? She said, she's a big philanthropist and she has an amazing collection, so please go. And, you know, like, we would normally have art or pictures on the walls. She had only jewelry on her walls. She was a jewelry collector. And she didn't buy the jewelry to wear. But it was literally like floor-to-ceiling jewelry. And you can't even concentrate because there was such amazing stuff. And she says, you know, I'm blown away by what you're doing.
Mm.
And I've collected jewelry. And a lot of that jewelry is along the Silk Route and from India.
Mm.
And I've given some part of the collection to the Met, some to the Art Institute in Chicago, and some to the Asian in San Francisco.
Mm.
But I still have about 500 pieces left.
Mm.
Would you like to have this collection for MAP? And I said, is this person for real? Because in India, one thing which I hadn't realized is because most of these museums are only government museums, that people have not been very forthcoming in gifting it to the government. Mm. Although initially, a lot of gifts, even to the government museums, came from private collections. Mm. But the last 20, 25 years, there's been nothing significant like that. And I think the moment two, three people gave collections, it gave more confidence to the others.
Mm.
And especially when they saw what we were doing.
Yeah.
And with the depth and the sincerity with which we were doing it. And at the end of the day, it's like giving your legacy because one could easily monetize it. Mm. But sometimes the younger generation is not that interested. Sometimes it's a matter of, what am I going to do with this?
Mm.
And if you can find a home which is a good home for it, then you feel better about it.
Right. That's an amazing story and, you know, great generosity of this person. But from what I understand, eventually a lot of people came forward and contributed.
Yeah, now we actually are very selective in what we take because where do we keep it?
Right.
And how do we look after it?
Right. And just can you talk about, you know, so what are some of the collections in right now we are, you know, at MAP? Just if you go floor by floor, what are some of the, you know, unique collections that you...
So I won't say floor by floor because these are changing exhibitions.
Okay.
But there are six major departments that we have in the collection. And this was just how my collecting journey had been. And it was the people who had led me to that. So not in any particular order, but there is modern and contemporary art. There's classical art.
Mm-hmm.
Or what we call pre-modern art, mm-hmm. which was art before independence or something like that. There's popular culture,
mm-hmm.
which traditionally is not stuff that was meant to last, so people never classified it as art. There's photography, there's textile craft and design,
mm-hmm.
and living traditions of folk and tribal art. So these are the six basic categories.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the gifts that we've received fit into one of these categories.
Yeah.
If we split this further, we could make additional categories, but these are the six broad categories.
Mm-hmm.
So currently at MAP, we have a show on popular culture, which is our postcard exhibition
mm-hmm.
called Hello and Goodbye. We have one show, which is a combination of modern and contemporary with living traditions, which is Meera Mukherjee and Jaydev Bagel.
Mm-hmm.
And our permanent collection, our permanent exhibition is Visible Invisible, which has works from all the six different departments.
Mm-hmm.
Our sculpture courtyard, again, has a modern and contemporary artist, Nick Chan. And we've got another show by Jim Lambie,
mm-hmm.
which is a show that we've actually borrowed. It doesn't belong to us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a Scottish artist. And the very same, it's an additioned work. One is with the MoMA, the other is with the Tate Modern.
Right.
And we've borrowed the third one.
And this, some of the, and you mentioned last time also we were speaking that some of these... top, you know, museums around the world, they're quite interested in collaborating with you. Just from, like, why are they interested?
Ask them why they're interested. I'm just happy that they are.
And what kind of collaboration you're pursuing with these, you know, folks?
So I think there are different kinds. It really started off during the pandemic that how do we bring art to the people?
Mm.
And when I was answering that question as to why is art really important, we were all locked up sitting at home.
Mm.
How do we bring art to you? And this was a very simple idea which came from one of my advisory board members was, why don't we look at storytelling between two collections?
Mm.
So we went to the British Museum. We went to the Victoria and Albert. We went to, I think there was the RISD Museum. There were six museums that we went to. And we said, let's choose one thing from your collection and one thing from our collection and see where they intersect and tell a story. So it was a digital collaboration.
Yeah.
We were all locked up.
Mm.
We had a curator or a director from their side speaking to a curator from our side.
Mm-hmm.
They would record their part. We would record our part. It was like a little bit of going back and forth. And you made a video and you produced it.
Mm.
Now we've done about 30 museums, and it's an ongoing feature, and from museums from all over the world.
Yeah.
And we may be having at least 30 in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a simple thing like that. Another series was the director's cut, where our director is in conversation with another director about museum making and how does that happen. There's another series called The Deep Dive, which is speaking about an aspect of art which we may not otherwise get to see over here through the eyes of a historian somewhere across the world. Some of these were, they started off digitally, but they've morphed into hybrid and even physical events. There's another one which we'd call the Insider's View, where the curator takes you into an exhibition that they have hosted there. So we have done an exhibition at the Houston Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, or into different museums around the world in the M Plus or wherever. Not all of us travel everywhere, but you don't want to miss a show. So this way you can get a private tour.
Amazing. That's great. Yeah. So that thing. So you're able to get access to and also share, you know, what we have here with, you know.
So we are actually doing something far more which is not digital also in terms of training. And many museums, like the British Museum, every year they invite somebody from our team to do a whole summer program there and learn. Our head of conservation was invited by the Met to do a workshop over there. So we are sending people, they are sending people to train us, and that's how we are collaborating. Exhibitions, borrowing and lending of artworks.
Outstanding. So Abhishek, you launched MAP in December 2020 at the, I think there was a, probably second wave of pandemic. But the museum has come a long way, I think, with very healthy attendance. So just like, how has the journey of last few years have been, and what kind of attendance you are seeing, and also coming years, in what are you expecting?
So I think currently we are getting, a bad month is about 8,500 people. A good month is about 10,000 people. And many are visiting digitally. But where we are really getting a lot of attendance, which is only digital, is the MAP Academy, which is our online learning one. We have about 50,000 new people coming in every month over there. The whole premise was, how do we democratize art? How do we take it to everybody in a manner that is relevant and engaging? If you ask me what numbers would make me happy, I'm not sure I have a number. But what would make me happy is to see, when we have to wait for half an hour to get into a museum, when would that happen here?
Right.
When there are enough people waiting to get in, that day I think I would feel that we've done something.
And part of, you know, waiting to get in a museum is probably a function of two things. One is, we need high quality experience, and I'm going to ask you later. I mean, MAP is obviously, I think, the gold standard of what a good quality experience looks like, but, you know, replicating that across, you know, other museums in the country, but also more awareness. In some ways, you know, from a distance, a lot of people think, you know, art is something, it's only for elite, you know, where you started saying that's the perception. But in some ways, you know, art is for everyone at some level. You know, most museums around the world are, you know, either free or, you know, cost is hardly anything. You know, it's funded through other initiative and effort. So a little bit, you know, that whole reconnecting with art and heritage is required, right, for that.
You're very right. Mukesh, we don't have a museum-going culture in our country, which is what we hope to be a catalyst of change in that. We've tried to keep MAP as affordable as possible. One day of the week is a free day. Whenever we do an opening, it's free. We are doing between 15 to 20, 22 events a month. All of them are free. Tomorrow and day after, we have a conference. We have 30 speakers. Everything is free. Everything we do for schools is free. All our education is free. The MAP Academy is free. Yet we need to pay our bills and we need to pay our staff. And like you said, it is because of the goodwill, like, of people like you and others who've supported us, which allows us to do what we are doing. Because it costs us a lot more than what we are able to get in a subsidized ticket rate. The whole premise and the hope is that with more people getting excited about art, a time will come where we won't have to strive to answer this question, how are we going to pay our bills?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there is a effort to raise our endowment so that that can take care of the balance. And fortunately, with CSR, that also helps that, and everybody in India is making money, so they have money to give.
And I know you have a lot of MAP is, you know, funded by yourself, but many other people, as you mentioned, you know, supporting you from early days. And you would have talked to a lot of these people in a lot of depth. What is their motivation? Because, you know, they're really not getting any credit or anything. There is obviously no financial motive. But yet, you know, they want to support art. And so what are, you know, range of, you know, motives that different people have to?
So I think some have actually believed in what I was doing. And of course, at that time, it was a promise. There was nothing to show them.
Yeah.
Some knew me from before. But there are many of my founders who I've still not met because they came recommended by somebody else. I think some of the people who supported me just gave me money to get rid of me because they said, this guy's not going to leave us until we do it. Some people do it for their name. Some do it where they don't want their name. So there are a host of different things. Some people genuinely believe in doing good. Not many of the people who've supported us are traditional art collectors, which one would have imagined would be the first cohort to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the way it's happened. Also, I think we are very fortunate to be in Bangalore. I don't think any other city has the love for the city the way Bangaloreans do. And I think it's unique to Bangalore that the way people do for the city, and there are so many such examples, whether it be in different spheres, but they've actually given a large portion of their wealth and their time and commitment just selflessly to make this a better place. And I think that's a very Bangalore thing. And we have lots of Bangaloreans who've supported this.
No, that's great. And partly, I think, Abhishek, this is, I'm just guessing, but see, we are also at a very interesting juncture in the country's, you know, evolution. I think until very recently, fighting, you know, poverty, corruption, you know, jobs, like a lot of, you know, everyday struggle issues were there. But we are hitting some kind of inflection point on economy, you know, getting close to $4 trillion. Now, everyone is talking about $20, $30 trillion economy. With that, I think also there is a renewed desire to find our roots, like who we are, because, you know, we have this whole colonial past that we need to get rid of. And a lot of that, you know, identity, who we are as a country, comes from art and heritage and crafts, right? So partly, it just can't only be about, you know, how much exports and economy and per capita income. Who are these people?
Who are we as people? I think you've summed it up really well. And, you know, when a country does well economically, then these softer things start becoming more important.
Yeah.
You know, when your basic needs are not going to be taken care of, where would you be looking at the finer things in life? So I think India's time has come.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be providence that our timing has been such.
Yeah,
I don't think there was a plan, because if one had that divine pair of binoculars to see what the future was like, then one would see many other things.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, you know, we are not a museum-going nation, but I want to just, for the viewers, you know, describe, you know, spending few hours in a museum. What does it do to you? You know, what do you feel like? You know, what's the, you spend 2-3 hours, you know, in presence of a lot of art. Some you may understand, some you may not even understand. But what does that do to you, your psyche?
So think of it like when you are a kid and you go to the fair. You know, your eyes are open and your mouth is open and you're just absorbing stuff. You may not even be processing it then. And it might even be a little bit of a blur, because museums generally are an overload. Unless you're a serious museum goer, then you will go to see those 5 artworks or 1 exhibition. But very often as tourists, when you go to the Prado or to the Louvre, you want to see every room, and at the end of the day, you see nothing. But I think it's, art takes a little bit of time, but art never fails to deliver on its magic. It transforms you in a very different way. So if somebody was to teach you how to fish, and the next day they can count how many fish you've caught, and your success about learning that thing is known. In this world today of measuring impact, it's a very fuzzy thing. In art, you can never measure the impact, because are you going to wake up the next day knowing something that you didn't know before? Possibly not. But are you going to be transformed in a way at some point in your life? For sure. It's like, you know, it's not a medicine that you can give that cures something, but it's a medicine for your soul.
Yeah.
And once you've tasted that, you won't go back to a life without art.
Amazing. Medicine for your soul is, I think, a very appropriate phrase. But and I agree, you know, a lot of it only impact is subtle. But there are a lot of correlations with just generally mental health, well-being as well. In fact, I think you were sharing an example a while back about, you know, some studies and all that. Can you talk about that?
So, clearly, like the same example I'm giving about the pandemic, the only reason we are sane today is because of that. Imagine, even thinking about this, in our lifetimes, nobody had lived through two pandemics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The previous one, 100 years ago, very few people. I mean, today I read about this guy who was 124. So maybe he's one of the few who lived through both. But even today, it seems a little impossible, though we've just gone through that, to imagine you'll be locked up in one place for 2 years. Just the thought of it can make you crazy.
Yeah.
The one thing that has kept us sane is art. But it actually calms you down. It reduces. The problem is with this little gadget that we carry around in our pockets.
Yeah.
It has reduced our attention span so much.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, a nice article in a magazine would be 15 pages long. Mm. Today, if an email is more than one screen length long, you push it off for reading it at a later date. So I don't know what we are doing to ourselves. Now, art requires you to slow down and spend 3 minutes in front of it, not 4 seconds that we do. If you just spend 2 to 3 minutes in front of art, you don't even need to wait. Mm. You will see the difference yourself.
Yeah. And during pandemic, I mean, obviously the mental health issues just, you know, shot through the roof, you know. Actually, I never thought of this, but I want to share something with you. It's towards the second half of pandemic, Abhishek, I have, you know, never ever painted in my life. I was terrible painter in school, like I think I used to get C or D. But 2 years ago, just on a whim, you know, I decided I'm going to try my hand at painting. I just got a basic, you know, kit and this small canvas, A4 size, like I painted 5-6. But felt so great, you know, I mean, it's nothing to, you know, what's showing to anyone. But, you know, just act of, you know, putting color on canvas and just dragging it and making some shapes.
For many people, it's absolutely meditative and therapeutic. In my case, it gives me more of the jitters because I just realize how bad I am. So I don't even attempt to do
but
that.
But you have painted with some of the greats. I think you were sharing a story of, you know, painting with Manjit Bawa. You should talk about that story.
Yeah, except that fortunately, they all repaint over what I've done. Because otherwise, there's nothing to write home about. I painted with them not because I'm a great painter. It's because they were great friends. And they allowed me to scribble on their work. But otherwise, oh God, no. I have terrible hand-eye coordination. What I think I can paint and what it actually comes out are totally different things.
But your work probably lives on, you know. After 500 years, when people do the X-ray, you know, analysis, they will see this, you know.
So I remember Hussein.
Yeah.
Hussein was actually a dear, dear friend of mine. I met him when I was 15 and he used to come and stay with me in Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he said, let's paint together.
Wow.
And we unrolled this canvas and we started painting. And I was just throwing color on canvas and he was making sense of it. And then he actually asked me to sign it. And he signs one side and he makes me sign the other side. And I said, Hussain Saab, I can't sign this. He said, no, you painted it with me. You jolly well sign it. That's so. You know, at that time, I thought it was a stupid thing. But today, I feel proud.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I try and say that the part he's painted was painted by me and the other part was painted by him. But the truth is, anyone who knows about it can tell what was done by me.
And you have that with you still? Okay, exhibited somewhere here or will be?
It's hanging in my office.
But I have to ask you, like, what was it like? I mean, you know, that's how many people in the in the world today say that they had the, you know, they were able to paint something together with MF Hussain. I mean, that's a, you know,
I was a kid, Mukesh. I think he was trying to humor me as a 16, 17 year old and asked me to do that.
What an incredible life experience. But, you know, so, I mean, you have, you know, a lot of great artists of the country, you've spent time with them. What is some of the learnings when you spend time with them, watch them in action? You know, what are some of the things that stay with you? Like, you know, seeing a master at work and you as an observer, you know, from close quarter watching, you know, their mindset and the method of working.
So, many things. I mean, I haven't thought about it like that, but now that you're asking me to, and I can immediately think of two, three. We feel that an artist is someone who's a little casual about it because this is what they're doing. They take their work very seriously. And for them, this is their expression, this is their medium, this is their livelihood. As seriously as you would take your work or I would take MAP is how they would take their work. And seeing the dedication that they would put into it. I mean, someone like Amanjeet, who we were talking about, he would finish the background of his paintings, which was always a single flat color, irrespective of how large the canvas was, in one sitting, even if it took 12 hours to do, without a break. So that's the kind of dedication and mastery that they had. Meera Mukherjee, whose exhibition you're seeing over here, remarkable woman, remarkable woman. Two stories I'll tell you about her. Very, very simple lady. Radhika and me were engaged. We weren't married, so I'm talking about 1991. There is a sculpture of a dog that she had in her studio. And Radhika was very fond of dogs, and I was making a collection of dogs for her. So I said, I must go and buy that sculpture. The next time I went to Meera's place, the sculpture wasn't there. So I said, Meera, did you sell it? And she kind of changed the topic once, twice, three times. So I said, tell me, where is the sculpture? And she says, let it be. So I said, no, tell me what happened. She breaks down crying and she says, I didn't have money to buy bronze for my next sculpture. So I melted down that sculpture. And I said, how much money did you need? And she said, some 3,000 or 4,000 rupees. She could have easily sold that sculpture for more money than that. But her pride was that she would not ask for help and she would do something like that. Another story about the same lady. It was my sister's wedding and she had gifted a sculpture for her. And because she was a person of such little means, I didn't want to take something from her which she could have easily sold. And she would have minded if I didn't accept it. So she would not accept money from me. So I said, let me give her a gift instead. So it was a small pair of diamond earrings that I took as a gift to give to her, seeing that it was about double the value of what her sculpture would have been. And the next time when I went, I saw her maid wearing it. And it was possibly the most expensive thing that she owned. Yeah. And I was a little taken aback, seeing it in the earlobes of her maid. And she saw me see that and she must have gauged my expression change or something. So she asked me, she says, you're looking at her earrings. So I said, yeah, she's speaking to me partly in Hindi, partly in Bengali. So I said, haan, didi, I'm looking at her earrings. She's saying, tum humko de diya, tab to humara ho gaya na. I said, haan, apka ho gaya. She's saying, to hum jisko de, wo humara marji. So I said, haan, apka marji. Then you know what she says? Now, whether she said that to make me feel better or she actually meant it, and I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt. She said, dekho, hum pehnega to hum to dekh hi nahi sakta. Ye pehnega to hum to roj enjoy kar sakta. I thought that was such a beautiful thing to say. And how many of us even think like that?
It's outstanding.
So when you're talking about what I've learned from them, I can't even, if I sit down to think, I've learned many, many hundreds of things from them.
It's an incredible story, Abhishek. I think, you know, you are a pioneer. I think, you know, in every right of, you know, kind of taking, you know, this initiative and really, you know, put together a place like this, It's kind of, you know, culmination of lifetime of effort, you know, immersion, engagement.
You know, I just feel art. Blessed that I can do this. Like people said, if you're passionate about something and you do it, it's not work. Similarly, initially they used to say, "Jo dene mein maja hai na, wo lene mein nahi hai." I said, "What rubbish!" mere ko to lene mein bahut maja aata hai, dene mein nahi aata hai. But after living a journey where you actually experience this, the joy in giving is much more than in receiving. And what I have received in giving is far more than I've given.
No, absolutely. I remember when I just moved back to Bangalore in 2007-8, a friend of mine, you know, he invited to a talk that his father was, you know, giving, and the topic was this joy of giving. And exactly, I thought, you know, what is he even talking about, right? And
Mukesh, we would not have met had it not been for MAP.
Right.
Mm. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
Like you, there are so many people who've come into my life who our lives would have not even intersected. Forget coming into my life, they have even come and supported MAP, they've become friends. Now, how do you put a price to this?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now that, and I mean, so you are, you know, getting a lot of things back. But I think what you're doing also, I think it's also matters the larger scheme of things. I truly meant it when I said, I think the India will be on a journey to find, you know, who we are. You know, we cannot claim to be a great nation without being truly proud of and owning our heritage and celebrating it, right? So in that, I think you have, you said artists, you know, start movement, but you are also starting a movement, you know, by showing what can be done.
I'm just fortunate to be able to do this. I mean, maybe a streak of madness, maybe the project with the government not working out. Everything happens at the end of the day for the best.
You said, you know, streak of madness is required in artists, so there you go. But it's you know, I'm very grateful, you know, first of all, you know, allowing me to be involved in any capacity.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, of opening up your space for this shoot and sharing your story so candidly, I think is very inspiring. And I really hope that this is the start of a much larger, you know, art movement.
Thank you for getting me to participate in this. I am grateful and honored, Mukesh. And thank you for being a part of the journey for MAP.
Absolutely. Thank you, Abhishek. At Sparks, we aim to bring to you stories of exponential impact. We share in-depth analysis of what goes behind success stories. If you find our conversations interesting, you can join us by subscribing to our YouTube channel. You can also listen to Sparks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other audio platform of your choice. If you have any suggestions on who we should invite or what topics we need to cover, just let us know in the comments. We are always listening, looking for ways to improve, and keep getting better as we go along.